This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to this Monday edition of Washington Watch. With just 5 days left of the fiscal year, the clock is running out on the effort to repeal Obamacare. Can Senate Republicans come up with the 51 votes needed to save the repeal effort? South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham, co-author of the latest repeal effort, joins me in just a moment with the answer. And has the NFL gone too far in what can only be described as an anti-American protest? Former Major League Baseball pitcher and former ESPN analyst Kurt Schilling is here for that discussion. Also, lawmakers in my home state of Louisiana are responding to the Saints taking a knee. State lawmakers are threatening to take the dough, the state's $17 million tax subsidy of the NFL team. State Representative Kenny Havert explains. And if there was ever a need for prayer, well, that time is now. This Wednesday is the annual See You at the Poll event being held on school campuses around the nation. Doug Clark, National Field Director for See You at the Poll, joins me with the details. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you happen to miss anything on your way home this afternoon, you can catch it all later right there at the website, TonyPerkins.com. It is archived. And if you're on Twitter, well, it's at T. Perkins. Okay, as the Republican Party continues to push for the repeal of Obamacare, and I would argue to hold on to their majority, a revised version of the Graham-Cassidy bill was circulated to Senate Republicans Sunday evening with the aim of winning over key votes. Joining us now is the co-author of the bill, Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina. He serves on the Committee on Appropriations and Committee on Armed Services, the Budget and Judiciary. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. Thank you very, very much.
Well, let me just start with probably the most obvious question. Can the Senate beat the clock and repeal Obamacare?
We're going to try as hard to repeal it as they did to pass it. So, yes, I think we can. We got a lot of momentum. Can I tell you very briefly what we're trying to accomplish here?
Go right ahead. That was my next question.
Okay. Federalism versus socialism. You decide what you want. Under Obamacare, it is not working. My state, South Carolina, is down to one provider. In 2014, we had five insurance companies on the state exchange. We're down to one with a 31% increase as of Friday of last week, 13% increase in premiums nationwide. 45% of the counties in this country are down to one provider. 45 counties have no competition. So Obamacare is failing miserably. I intend to do something about it. So here's what we do. We repeal the employer mandate, the individual mandate at the federal level. If you want to reimpose them at the state level, you can. If you want to go to single-payer health care in California or Oregon, you can. You just can't drag South Carolina with you. We take the rest of the funding for Obamacare that would have went to federal bureaucrats, insurance companies, and we block grant it back to the states over a 10-year period to achieve parity in spending by 2030. We give states flexibility, control over the money. You have more voice about how your health care will be administered because the people in charge of it you can vote for. Under Obamacare, some bureaucrat who could really doesn't care much about you. That's the idea. I think it's a very good idea. It's called federalism. It worked with welfare reform, Tony. It will work with health care.
Well, Senator Graham, so I assume with the elimination of the mandates that the penalties go with that.
Yes. So it's $450 billion in savings. We also reform Medicaid. Medicaid is going to cost more than the military budget by 2027. That's health care for the working poor. I want to help the working poor, but I'm tired of people running to emergency room and getting, you know, when they have a headache, you know, they need to be in a health care home. We need to do better by them. But we got to slow the growth of Medicaid. In year eight right. of the block grant, Medicaid has an inflation rate that is more sustainable, and we get more flexibility to get better outcomes. So we replace Washington-centric health care under Obamacare with state-controlled health care. You can't spend it on roads or bridges or hospitals or, football stadiums. You got to spend it on health care. But one size does not fit all.
Well, I agree with that in principle. I want to get into the details of the bill, and then I want to look out long term because
sure.
I've had some experience at the state level of some of these government programs when the feds give money to the state officials.
Mm-hmm.
They don't always work out like we had planned. So I'll get to that in a moment. But
sure.
first, some important aspects of this bill that I think our listeners want to know about is that in some ways, this is better than previous versions of repeal, because the way this money is block granted to the states, as I understand it, as I've read the measures, is that the Hyde-type language is applied to this so that no federal tax dollars can be used to fund abortions, elective abortions.
Under Obamacare, you don't have such restrictions. We're going to take $1.2 trillion that we would have spent on Obamacare, and we're going to block grant it in a fashion that I think is fair. Under Obamacare, between 2020 and 2026, Tony, four states get 35.4% of the money. They're 22% of the population: New York, California, Massachusetts, and Maryland. We're going to take that money, block grant it back to the states in a fair allocation. The Hyde protections follow every dollar, and that's not true of Obamacare. So I think it is a revolutionary idea in terms of health care, getting the money closer to the patient. In the hands of people the patient can vote for, that will be listened to. We did this with welfare reform in the 90s. Mm-hmm. It worked. And this is the end of single-payer health care. I hope you understand. If we fail, then it's just a matter of time until you have Bernie Care. Obamacare is not good enough for the liberals. They want to go to Bernie Care, which is socialized, 100% government-owned health
care. Which they wanted from the very beginning, and this
was
just kind of
a
stop along the way.
Yes. It's a placeholder for Bernie Care. Obamacare is a placeholder.
Right.
Graham Cassidy Heller Johnson is a block grant that takes the money and power out of Washington, and that's the end to the march of single-payer health care.
Yeah, and in fact, this concept of the block grants is something we proposed and worked for in the House when they were working on their version, but they said they couldn't get it done. So I'm actually glad to see that in the Senate you've actually done something the House couldn't do. There's another aspect of this, and that is with the issue of funding for organizations that are involved in abortion, such as Planned Parenthood. That's long been an issue that's been talked about in reconciliation.
Right.
That will remain.
That stays. That stays. The same language in the House bill stays in the Senate bill. Let me just say about my Republican colleagues. If we're not for this, what are we for? Now, we know where the Democrats are going. To their credit, they have a belief in their ideas. They're willing to fight for them. We passed Obamacare on Christmas Eve. They use reconciliation. There's nothing they won't do to get their way.
Right.
We need to be as determined to repeal it as they were to replace it. We need
I
to
agree
get the
with
money
you.
And power out of Washington. And I'm determined, my friend. This is the biggest thing I've ever done in my 20 years up here. And if we win this fight, we change the course of spending and health care. And if we lose this fight, God help your children and grandchildren.
Well, Senator Graham, if you do this, you'll do something that, as far as I know, has never been done. And that is to take a massive social program that has been thrust onto the American people and reverse it.
Right.
Now, I know there's some criticism that doesn't go far.
Sure.
Enough. I get all that. I understand.
Absolutely. But here's what I would say, Tony. We're going in the wrong direction. This puts us on a new path. Reconciliation is a restriction on how much flexibility
right.
we can give.
I
That's
agree.
Just the way the Senate works. The Democrats have been in charge of the Senate five times more than we have since World War II. So we're using a process they used. We turn around this ship. We begin to sail in the right direction. And over time, this idea will get better, because I think Democratic governors are going to understand that they have more control over health care mm-hmm. under this model, and maybe can get better outcomes.
Well, look, I fully support it. I think you're absolutely right. If it's not done, it leads to a single-payer government-controlled system with no protections. I will say this, and I'm going to get to the fiscal side of it here in just a moment.
Sure.
But from a social perspective, from a life perspective, I believe this measure is solid. It defunds Planned Parenthood, something that has never happened before.
Just like the House did.
Exactly. I think it's a good bill, and I think anyone who wants to claim the title of being pro-life would, in the United States Senate, would have a lot of explaining to do if they don't support this bill. That's just my view, but that's
well,
the way
you know,
I
would say that you know, we do what the House did with defunding Planned Parenthood for a year, because that's all we can do under reconciliation. I hope you understand.
You did more. You do more than the House did by block granting this money.
The Hyde protections. You know, every dollar of Obamacare is now block granted with Hyde protections.
And that becomes statutory language.
Yeah, that becomes. I mean, I cannot tell you how big a change that is.
Yeah.
But I can just say this about health care: if it were working, I wouldn't be on this phone if Obamacare delivered the way they said it.
Well, we'd be talking about North Korea.
We'd be talking about North Korea, but yeah. It is getting worse. The worst is yet to come with Obamacare. But to me, we Republicans, we finally got something to be for.
Yeah. Okay. Let me, before we run out of time, let's look down the road here. 10 years.
Okay.
How is this going to work if the states are irresponsible in the way they allocate their monies? Can they come back to the federal government? Is the federal government going to be bailing out the states who, like California, that has proven they cannot be responsible? What's going to happen then?
Okay, I can tell you, if welfare is any indication, they claimed in 96 if we blocked granted money to deal with welfare to the states, people would die and it wouldn't work and, you know, they'd come back and ask for more money. We haven't increased the block grant at all because it actually worked. So here's what I would say. I would say that the ability to ask for more money is going to be a hard sell once other states prove they can use the money. You know who's the biggest winner under Obamacare? Insurance companies. My biggest critics are the Blue Cross Blue Shield insurance companies. They get hundreds of billions of dollars of direct payment through Obamacare. We take that money and give it to state government. I'm 100% confident that the Scott Walkers of the world, the Doug Ducey's of the world, the Republican governors of the world, and some Democrats are going to show us how to take money and get better outcomes. The idea that the federal government would in the future invest in something that's failed, I think, is virtually zero. But in a democracy, you never let your guard down. Getting the money and power out of Washington is step one. Do you agree with that?
Mm-hmm. I do.
Keeping the money and power out of Washington is a continuous fight. The Democrats, as long as I'm around, liberal Democrats, will be trying to undo what I've created. And we have to stay vigilant. And 10 years from now, we're going to have to make sure that the gains we've achieved stay in place. So it's a fight. You know, it's like going on a trip with your kids. They ask you, when do we get there? In democracy, it's the journey itself. If we can pull this off and pray that we can, we're taking a different journey as an American public, as American people. We're rejecting socialism, and we believe that people closer to the patient are more caring than some bureaucrat. And I was in Greenville, South Carolina, Tony, asked the people, do you know your state house member? Almost everybody raised their hand. Do you know the governor? Everybody raised their hand. Do you know the person in charge of Obamacare in South Carolina? Nobody raised their hand. I am telling you, having money and power closer to the people is going to deliver better results.
Without question. I mean, government closest to the people is always the most responsive and responsible. Senator, we're out of time, but one final question. What should people do that want to see this happen?
Get on the phone and call your member of the Senate, call the Congress, call the Senate and say, don't stop fighting. I'm never going to quit because there's too much at stake here. I'm going to keep fighting and keep fighting like they did.
All right. Well, we appreciate it, Senator, and thanks for being with us.
Thank you. God bless.
All right, Senator Lindsey Graham. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. This has to happen because I think he's absolutely right. If it doesn't happen now, we are locked into this path to a single-payer system, which will be horrendous. All right, coming up next, a couple of hundred NFL players protested during various national anthems across the country yesterday. Fans protested as well by not watching. We'll talk with Kurt Schilling next, no stranger to politics and sports. That's coming up here on Washington Watch. Don't go away.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? Our founding fathers knew that God's transcendent truth must be the foundation for all law. Since the early 20th century, however, truth-based rule of law has changed dramatically in America. The progressive era ushered in big change, shifting our standards to make it appear that truth is ever-evolving. America's founding fathers determined truth from a fixed source, God. But progressives determined that truth originated with man, thereby making it possible to change the truth in order to fit shifting cultural opinions and to undergird the power of those elected in office. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston reveals the importance of truth founded in God and the consequences of moral relativism. Is truth fixed or is it subject to change? The future existence of our free democracy hinges on answering this question correctly. Go to frc.org/decay to learn more.
In America, we face a media onslaught against the Christian perspective. It is now seen as anti-cultural and invalid. Dr. Michael Paulson, a law professor at the University of St. Thomas, talked about how Christians can respond intellectually. Dr. Paulson has researched common arguments against religious liberty. For example, religious values are no different than ethical values. Dr. Paulson argues that the law should give religious exemptions because of the perspective of a religious person who necessarily believes in God as an ultimate source. Religion is different and necessitates a different kind of devotion. Moreover, the Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom of exercise. The Christian perspective is one that is not outdated, but still present and still valid according to the Constitution. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. A candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discussed the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T Perkins. All right, yesterday, as many Americans recognize National Gold Star Mother's Day, a day that Congress actually enacted back in 1936, I believe, to honor the mothers who have lost their sons and daughters in the defense of freedom in our nation's military. Well, with that as the backdrop, over 200 NFL football players kneeled or set out the national anthem. This is, of course, and then there was the response from President Trump on Saturday night, and I mean, it just kind of blew up. And you know, I don't necessarily agree with exactly how the president said it, but I agree with him, and I applaud the president for calling out the NFL. And of course, we've been watching this. This is something we've talked about, how the NFL, professional sports, have become politicized. And as a result, what we see happening is increasingly people are tuning out and turning away. And we see stadiums that are, you know, a lot of empty seats. And I, you know, look, I will say this. I am not for, you know, firing people, okay? I don't think we should do that. But I do think that with our dollars, we should not support these things. When you have, I mean, sports for a long time historically has been something that brought the nation together. I mean, you think after 9/11, when President Bush walked to the mound at Yankee Stadium and threw out the first pitch, you know, the nation was watching. They came together. You know, sports in times of crisis. Sports has brought us together, but now what we're seeing, these sports are being used to divide the nation, where, you know, you see players like Colin Kaepernick, you know, taking a knee and that kind of becoming contagious among the other players, and they're refusing to stand and honor the very flag that gives them the freedom to become very wealthy individuals. And you know, so do they have, I mean, yeah, certainly they have the right, but do we have to tolerate it? And I think the president was right, not necessarily in the way he did it, but I do think he was right in calling them out for it. And we're going to be joined, I think, here in a moment by Curt Schilling. We'll see former Major League Baseball pitcher and former ESPN analyst who has been tracking this stuff. He knows a little bit about politics and sports, but we're trying to connect with him. He might be running late like I did to an interview with him a couple of weeks ago. I got tied up and was late getting in with him, so maybe he's paying me back. I don't know. But and we'll talk about this a little bit later. But I want to know if this is turning you off to professional sports and how there's no, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, there's no longer a safe space for Americans to come together, you know, to enjoy a game, entertainment. It has to be politicized. I mean, that takes all the fun out of it. There's another aspect to this, and we're going to be talking about this in the next segment. The NFL actually collects a lot of, at least the stadiums and some of the owners and the franchisees, they collect lots of tax dollars. In fact, I believe NFL stadiums have collected over $1 billion in federal subsidies. And in my home state of Louisiana, and this is something I was opposed to and fought against years ago when I was in office, and that was subsidizing the New Orleans Saints. And it's this way in many, many states in order to lure them. And I'm okay with the kind of the tax incentives, but direct payments, subsidies for billionaires. That's what many states and even cities are engaged in to bring these NFL teams. And so should taxpayers be forced to subsidize these individuals who disrespect the national anthem and the American flag? I don't think so. I mean, again, I think I don't want you to miss the irony here. Yesterday, you know, the Gold Star Mother's Day, a day in which we honored the moms whose military sons and daughters paid the ultimate price. I wonder how many of those grieving women watched the NFL's demonstrations with tears streaming down their face as these players, so, I don't know. I mean, they just displayed their ungratefulness for a nation that has given them the freedom and the ability to, number one, play a game and get paid for it. I mean, think about it. And I know it's work. Look, I understand that. But they're playing a game. And they're making, many of them, millions of dollars. I wonder how many veterans who lost limbs in Iraq and Afghanistan tuned into an NFL game yesterday wishing they could actually stand for the national anthem or anything else for that matter. I think the president was right in calling them out, and that's what I'm going to ask you. What do you think? Was the president right? Not necessarily in the manner. I do not believe in using profanity. My grandmother used to say, if you have to use profanity, it shows that you don't have a very strong vocabulary. And so I think the president was wrong in the language he used, but I think he was right in calling them out. And so what do you think? You think the president was right in calling out the NFL? We're going to talk about that a little bit later here on Washington Watch, but still to come. We're going to be discussing actions that state lawmakers in Louisiana are taking to pull back the tax dollars going to underwrite and subsidize the NFL, the New Orleans Saints. And still to come as well, we're going to be talking about See You at the Poll. Since 1991, millions of kids have taken part in this powerful event, gathering on flagpoles on campuses across America to pray for their schools, their peers, their teachers. If there was ever a time our nation needed prayer, it's now. We're going to be talking about that and how you can connect and how your students can connect with See You at the Poll. All right, that's still to come here on Washington Watch. So guess what? We'll see you right after the break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about FRC, go to frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news.
Is being right enough to win an election? Political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Ornakis is one of the country's top political trainers. Hear him discuss the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election at frc.org/speakers. The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
This is Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you are on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, continuing our conversation about the NFL, Louisiana State Representative Kenny Havard, a Republican from St. Francisville, said Monday morning that he wants to cut millions in state tax dollars, exemptions and credits allocated to the New Orleans Saints, the NFL, and any of those groups associated with facilities that receive funding. Now, his announcement comes a day after a group of Saints joined the league protest during the national anthem. State Representative Kenny Havard joins us now. Kenny, welcome to Washington Watch.
Well, thank you, Tony. I appreciate you having me.
All right, the Saints, as I understand, in the 2017 budget, they stand to get about $17 million in subsidies from the state government. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's, you know, kind of what you drew me into looking at this more closely is because, you know, I have a bunch of state workers in my district that I represent. They can't participate in any way in any political function, go to a party, any of those things, you know, because they, you know, are state workers and receiving state tax dollars. So why in the world should we allow our state subsidized sporting event for people who ultimately ended up with that money being able to use it as a political platform?
I think that's certainly good reasoning. I would add, and I go back to my time in the state legislature when I was opposed from the very beginning the idea of giving money, whether it be to the professional football team in New Orleans or the basketball team. I just don't think taxpayers should be forced to subsidize these guys making millions of dollars. I mean, it goes back to the old Roman idea of bread and circuses for the masses, and I just don't think it's something government ought to be doing. But I think this brings a fine point to it, that we're actually subsidizing something that is openly mocking and standing in defiance of the values that made this nation great.
Look, the people standing outside that dome, whether it be, you know, men and women in uniform, the military service, or the police officers that protect that dome to keep someone from going in, you know, setting off some dirty bomb or whatever the case may be, you know, they deserve better than that being thrown in their face. If they want to protest, go on Sunday morning, go on Saturday night, go Friday night, and go protest, and I certainly am support their the First Amendment and their right to do so,
right,
and their right to, you know, I'm for that. But let's fight, you know, if we can't all as a country get behind our national anthem, our flag, okay, then it's, I don't know if it's not too far gone, you know, yeah. to even try to save at this point.
Because I mean, what can we get behind?
What can we get behind? So, you know, if they want to protest, you know, and talk about an injustice, to me the real injustice is kids in you know, portions of New Orleans and even Baton Rouge and some other major cities can't even ride their bicycles on the street for fear of getting shot, caught in the crossfire between, you know, some, you know, drug gangs and these sorts of things. You know, that's what we should be protesting. And I'll go down there and protest with them. But that's the real thing, and we can make a difference there. But this, I hope that this at least starts the conversation, and we can meet.
Well, let me ask you about that conversation, Representative Havard. You introduced this idea today. Over the last 5 years, the Saints have received over $100 million from the state. What type of response have you gotten from your colleagues?
From my colleagues, I've gotten a lot of response. People saying, you know, good idea, great, I'm with you, I support you. Now I've gotten some, you know, from, you know, ones that I knew would be against it. So, but look, I've not voted for the budget. Probably, I've been there 6 years, and don't hold me to these numbers, but probably four of the 6 years, I've not supported the budget. And one of the reasons is because of that. You know, because we are supporting the Saints, right. And here we are cutting kids on now waivers. We're cutting, you know, we can support the elderly and the kids on now waivers and our veterans if we quit subsidizing a billionaire. You know, so
right, and that's what this boils down to. The state has limited resources. It's not like the federal government that you can just keep the printing presses going. And the state has had been running deficits. You've had to cut a lot of programs to try to balance the budget, which is required every year. And so when you consider what's a priority, is it priority to subsidize billionaires and millionaires, or is it a priority to help the poor, the elderly, and those who can't help themselves?
And that's you know, it just happens that this is the year that they're protesting. And, you know, sitting there yesterday, you know, it just, you know, it struck a nerve with me, you know, when I watched it. I turned it off, and I won't be watching any more of NFL games. And, you know, and I would ask people, look, it boils down to this. If you believe in what I believe in, you know, if you think I'm right, then don't watch it. If you think they're right, then continue to watch it.
Well, we will be watching your effort here. I applaud you. I think it's a great move, and I hope you're successful. And we'll get back with you to see how things line up as the state deals with this issue. Kenny Havard, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you, Tony. I appreciate it.
All right. Louisiana State Representative Kenny Havard. According to Forbes, a 2015 Forbes story, Saints and Pelicans owner Tom Benson, who the Benson family's had it forever, was set to rake in an estimated $392 million from state subsidies through the year 2025. They do these long-term agreements, and the state is subsidizing to keep them there. Now, it's best for economic development. People come in for the games, and, you know, they go to Bourbon Street, and they buy, you know, whatever. But should taxpayers across the state be forced to pay for that? Well, nah, I don't think so. All right, coming up next this Wednesday, kids from around the country on campuses will be joining together to pray around flagpoles. We're going to talk about that with Doug Clark, the National Field Director of See You at the Pole. Don't go away. We're back after this.
Are you worried about the moral direction of America? Do you feel powerless to make a difference? Family Research Council is an organization that works to advance faith, family, and freedom in public policy and culture from a Christian worldview. Established in 1983 in Washington, D.C., Family Research Council conducts research, develops policy, drafts legislation, and educates policymakers, pastors, and the grassroots. It testifies before Congress and shapes public debate through the media and internet. Every day, the Christian worldview is increasingly being pushed out of the public square and out of public policy. We want you to know that we are your advocate in our nation's capital. To learn more about Family Research Council, please visit us at frc.org and follow us on social media to receive our action alerts and stay up to date on the latest news. Again, that's frc.org. Is being right enough to win an election? Many tend to believe that being right, in the sense of being factually correct, is sufficient to win in politics. Unfortunately, political history proves otherwise. The candidate who organizes and communicates the best will beat the opposition, no matter how right the other side is. Christians who are running for public office have a moral obligation to study and learn how to win. They must discover the real nature of politics. Robert Arnakis knows how to win. As senior director for the Leadership Institute, the nation's premier public policy training organization, he has 15 years of grassroots organizing, campaign, fundraising, and communications experience, and has established himself as one of the country's top political trainers. Here, Mr. Arnakis discusses the real nature of politics and how to overcome the odds to win an election. Go to frc.org/speakers to view this timely discussion. If you had to make a law, where would you start? America's founding fathers determined law from a fixed source, God, but culture has shifted the focus to man's self-determined law. If truth is no longer determined by God, it becomes subjective and open to interpretation. In an incisive new paper, Peter Johnston traces the origins of these dangerous trends in American law and the importance of staying true to our founding principles. To view FRC's new publication, go to frc.org/decay.
The Family Research Council had the pleasure of hosting Dr. Michael Paulson to speak about how Christians can respond to arguments against religious liberty. Dr. Paulson argues that religion is different and deems exemptions within the law. A religious person believes in God, and God's sovereignty requires complete devotion, whereas government only requires allegiance and civil duties. The Constitution itself treats religion differently, giving America religious liberty and the freedom to exercise. Visit frc.org/university to hear more about this issue.
Everyone, welcome to Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. And by the way, if you want to email me, Tony@TonyPerkins.com. I read those. I'd like to hear from you. Okay, this Wednesday, September 27th, thousands of students will gather at school flagpoles for the annual See You at the Pole prayer event all around the world. In every time zone, students will be praying for their school, their friends, family, churches, and communities. And you know what? I don't think there's ever been a time in which prayer was more needed than it is today. And we're grateful that kids will be praying around these poles. And, you know, I was just reading today in Matthew chapter 18, where it said, where Jesus said, if two will agree on earth, the same thing, Father in heaven will hear and answer their prayer. Let's hope they're praying as they do, that God will hear and answer their prayers. With us now is Doug Clark. He is the National Field Director for See You at the Pole. Doug, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to be with you.
You know, it's actually pretty exciting to see where this has come. It was all started when a group of teenagers gathered seeking God in prayer in a small Texas school back in 1990. It's come a long way over the decades.
It's been exciting to watch what's happened. Right from the very beginning, we believe that God has had his hand on this generation of kids and middle school, high school, college students praying in concert. You talk about unity, and you quoted Matthew 18, but for students to be praying literally all over the country and every one of the states of our nation. And over the history of See at the Pole, we've seen 64 different countries participate in it. And it is a great opportunity for the body of Christ to come together on a campus, but also spanning across all the campuses in our nation.
So Doug, take us back to 1990 when this first gathering took place in Burleson,
right,
Texas. What gave rise to that event?
Well, it was a group of students that were having a weekend retreat. It was part of something that's real common in Baptist circles called Disciple Now. And they were actually six freshman students meeting in a living room of two volunteer leaders in their church youth group in Burleson. And as they had a time of, it was near the conclusion of the retreat, there was a time of just profound surrender of different areas to their life. It was really in the context of brokenness that these students were committing their life to the Lord and were spending time in prayer. And they felt very clearly that God was leading them to go to this three different schools in their community around Burleson just to pray for the schools. So that was happening on a Saturday night. And so these six freshman students, two volunteer leaders out of something that, you know, not a great context of leaders or anything, but they were just students who are being obedient to God. And their youth pastor found out about it. He shared it with some other youth pastors. It became part of a statewide evangelism conference later that spring, and they used the idea of what these students had done to be the inspiration for See You at the Pole that fall, and it's just taken off.
You know, isn't that neat to think that if you obey God as the Holy Spirit is prompting you and you do something, you think, oh, this is really insignificant. I don't know why I'd want to do this, or this would be awkward.
Right.
But you do it, and it turns out that it literally encompasses the globe, and millions of people are affected by it. That's pretty powerful.
It is powerful, and it is my favorite thing about See You at the Pole are the roots of it. And I know that across the country on Wednesday, there will be some students who will pray by themselves, but they know they're not alone because they'll be a part of a much larger group of people who will be praying. But it's out of that context of brokenness, and certainly there's a great deal of brokenness in our country today. We look at what's happened weather-wise. We look at what's happening politically. We look at what's happened culturally. And now is a great time for us to expect God to do some, and for us as adults to pray for these students, but to expect God to do something big and maybe to bring a moral and spiritual awakening through their brokenness.
Absolutely. Absolutely essential. Absolutely needed. Doug, any pushback expected from, these anti-religious atheist groups?
Well, there's always misunderstanding. Sometimes there's immaturity on the part of other students. But we haven't had really a problem legally for quite a while now. Back in the 1990s, there was a great deal of work done, and Family Research Council, Focus on the Family, had an awful lot to do with helping promote what was true about the rights of students in terms of free speech. And I think that word has gotten out pretty well. There will be hot spots here and there where people just don't know what students' rights are. But even the Department of Education at the federal level says this is an appropriate expression of students' free speech rights. And so they are well within their rights to do it.
All right, Doug, how can students find out about places that they can join with other students to pray? And how can parents find out so that they might want to encourage their students to participate?
Yeah, you know, it's this week, but it's not too late to do something. And all that they need to know is free and available on our website, which is, for the initials of See With the Pole, SYATP.com. They can go and they can find out how to pray and prepare, publicize, plan to See With the Pole. That's a lot of P's right there. But to do that this Wednesday, and even at the last minute, if they're the only ones that come, God's gonna hear that. He's going to be there. As you said, two or three gathered together.
That's right. It'll be pleasing. Another P
to
the Lord.
Perfect.
All right, Doug, thanks so much for joining us, and thanks for the work you do. I think this is great. It's exciting. Thanks.
Thank you, Tony.
All right. All right, man, good stuff. Doug Clark. To find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com, and follow the links over. Students, I would encourage you, if your church your youth minister can actually come out and join you at this. It has to be student initiated, but this would be a youth project. Now, I know it's Wednesday, so it's just around the corner. But check out and make sure your school has one and participate in it. And parents, this might be something to nudge your kids about. Maybe they need to participate, or maybe the school needs one. Anyway, to find out more, go to the website, TonyPerkins.com. Follow the links over. Okay, I want to go back to our question earlier. We've got about 10 minutes left here. And I know some folks called in earlier, but I want to return to that topic of the NFL and the flag. We're talking about the flag poles. Well, the NFL yesterday, over 200 NFL players taking a knee when it came to the national anthem. Now, the president kind of got into a tweet battle, which seems to be his weapon of choice. And, I don't agree with everything that I don't agree with the way he said it. I agree with the stance he took. And I have to say, I appreciate the fact that this president is willing to stand up and speak out against political correctness. Most would just say, don't say anything. I mean, it's un-American. It really is. I mean, look, why, especially at a time when we have been at war for over a decade, and there are many, many veterans around this country who are missing arms and legs and emotionally scarred from their service to this country. And these guys who are raking in millions of dollars, you know, want to make a political statement and disrespect the American flag. Hey, look, they want to make a political statement, let them make a political statement. But I don't think it should be done when it comes to the national anthem. I mean, think about this. By the way, 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234. I'm going to get on a roll here. I mean, think about this when, you remember Tim Tebow, when he took a knee to pray, how controversial that was. But guys taking a knee when it comes to the national anthem and disrespecting the flag and those who have fought to defend it, that's applauded. Something's upside down here. 866-372-7234. Let's go to Matthew in Oklahoma. Matthew, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
I'm great. You, sir?
I'm good, sir. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your service.
Thank you.
I got the chance to serve as well, and I think it's disrespectful, and it's definitely a double standard. And I think those guys, they make $300,000 a year, what most people make. And I think maybe we should just ignore them.
Yeah.
So I've lost all respect for people that do that. Not that I had a lot to begin with, but I do think because they seem like a bunch of crybabies, you know? But anyway, there are some of them that are really great role models, but a lot of them, I don't know, it's just not, it's not what I grew up watching, so.
Right. Well, Matthew, thanks so much for the call. Appreciate, thanks for your service as well. You know, look, I understand that there are some that, you know, they're making a statement. You know, part of this is about the inequity in our society, the remaining elements of racism. I get all that, and I think it's wrong that it should be here. I'm saying the platform they've chosen to use to protest is wrong. I mean, the national anthem, the American flag, those are the things that bring us together. I mean, what else would bring us together as Americans? And to choose to take a knee, to me, is like, it's like kneeling on the graves of all of those men and women who have given their lives for our freedoms. And, you know, for those who haven't served, they probably don't really think much about this. They've not lost friends in defense of this country. They've not had to make next of kin visits where you go and you tell a mother that her son will never be coming home. You know, when you've done that, it gives you a little different perspective. It really does. Let's go to Texas, where Carol is on the line. Carol, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you today?
I am good. I have a couple things. Last week you had Burgess Owens on.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his response to the caller who called in about the oppression that the black man has always, you know, experienced. And he was eloquent, he was articulate, and he was right on with his response. And as far as these people who are taking a knee, friend of mine posted yesterday on her Facebook page, take a knee at Gettysburg while you hold the musket ball. Take a knee in World War II. Take a knee in Korea. Take a knee in Vietnam. Take a knee in Iraq. Take a knee in Afghanistan. But don't take a knee while they're playing our national anthem, because you are spitting in the face of every person and dishonoring the memory of every person who has given their life in service for this country.
Well said, Carol. I agree. And that's what the issue is. It's the platform they've chosen to protest. I was willing to fight to defend everyone's freedom of speech to articulate their concerns. I'm just saying these guys have a national stage, and to take a knee during the national anthem, you know, to disrespect the flag and those who have defended it, I just think it's inappropriate. It's not the place to do that. All right, we're going to stay in Texas. Let's go to Taylor in Texas. Taylor, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Thanks so much for taking my call. Just want to say I really do appreciate your stance on a lot of things and the stance that you're making for the Lord first and foremost, but obviously the stance for what's right in Washington. So thank you for that.
I appreciate that.
Also, just want to say, just real quick, I love Carol's comments. I love what she's got to say about what the national anthem stands for, what the flag stands for, what this country stands for, and love those comments. Also, just want to say real quick, Tony, that you know I was glad to hear you mention the fact that look, they're not protesting the national anthem, they're not protesting the flag. The ways and means in which they're protesting are not right. And they are offensive, and I think it probably demeans the message that they're trying to put out there. But really, I think so many, you know, including President Trump, forget what they're protesting for. And I think that's why I went from a handful of protesters to 200 yesterday, is because the way in which, and obviously the way he addressed it was offensive.
Mm-hmm.
But the things that he's saying, the things he's not saying and addressing what they're protesting for is really where a lot of this outrage comes from the black community and these NFL players. So let me just say, Tony, I don't agree with the ways and the platform in which they're protesting, but I feel like the message of what they're protesting for gets lost a lot.
Taylor, absolutely. Very valid point. And this is a part of, you know, I guess we should sit back and say, all right, how do we have a national discussion over these things? And it's not unlike a family. I mean, how do you have discussions in a family over, you know, sensitive issues where you feel like you've been wronged, you've been offended by someone else in the family? How do you sit down and talk about these things? Well, certainly, you don't raise the emotional level or you don't help the situation by raising the emotional level and maybe raising your voice or doing something that is, you know, just works everybody up. And I think that's what this is. So I do think there's a time and a place and there's an issue here that needs to be discussed. But I do have a very, very, very deep concern that this is a symptom of a greater problem. And that greater problem is our nation's coming apart. All right, folks, thanks so much for tuning in on this Monday. Lord willing, we'll be back tomorrow, Tuesday, and I hope you will as well. And be sure and invite somebody to tune in for Washington Watch. Until next time, I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.